Well, the Wellington Regional Council set to push the government to put buses and bus infrastructure back into public ownership. The capital's bus system continues to struggle with driver shortages, which have led to cancelled buses and changes in timetables. An as yet unknown number of rush hour bus services are to be temporarily cut from the end of July. A deal has now been struck between NZ Bus and drivers. It was reached yesterday, and the Wellington Regional Council have played a part in that deal being struck. The government is reviewing the public transport operating model, which was introduced in 2013 to encourage competition between companies for long-term council contracts for bus services. However, that model has also been blamed, with downwards pressure on costs, it is argued, leading to less than optimal conditions for drivers. Submissions close on Friday, and it's understood the Wellington Regional Council will be pushing for a return to public ownership. The Council's Chair, Darren Ponter, is with us now. Good morning, Darren.
Morning, Natasha.
Well, the bus deal has been struck between NZ Bus and its drivers, and how important is that?
Oh, look, that's really significantly important. This time 6 weeks ago, we had the prospect that we were going to have weeks of lockout and strike action that was just going to lock up Wellington City as a whole. So to have this announcement yesterday that something positive is going to go to drivers next week is really excellent.
How did we get from the point of the company trying to lock out buses and the court having to intervene with an injunction to getting a deal this quickly? What's moved it?
Look, I think both parties had become very entrenched in their positions. The Regional Council had stepped forward and offered mediation. So we engaged independent mediators to get the parties around the talking around the table and start seeing each other's side of the equation. And we also put the living wage on the table as the Regional Council. More recently, we have also started talking about filling in services in the interpeak period, so that drivers can have proper eight-hour shifts, rather than having these split shifts, which is becoming a real bugbear across the industry.
So, which of those things has been achieved?
Well, all of them. The mediators have kept the parties at the table so that they could keep on talking. The living wage will be built into the new contract, as it will with all our other operators in the region. And we announced yesterday that we are starting to re-time our timetables so that there are more interpeak services, so that drivers, in part, so that drivers can have full 8 hour shifts.
So, part of the reason for those peak hour services being temporarily cancelled from July is to ease the burden on the drivers?
No, to be fair, the primary reason why the peak hour services are being removed from July is because we do not have enough drivers. But we are also putting, as well as cancelling services in some peak hour services, we are putting more services into the off-peak. So we're smoothing the workload for drivers, and we will be encouraging commuters to travel more in the off-peak if they can.
How many drivers short at the moment? About 60?
50 to 60 drivers. And remember, quite a few of our drivers are over the age of 70, so if they feel sick, their instruction is to stay at home in the COVID environment.
With the living wage, has the Regional Council essentially provided funding for that? How has that been reached?
Yes, so we are providing funding through our long-term plan, which we square away at the end of June. That will then lock in effectively our commitment to provide the living wage. I have to say, though, Catherine, that the living wage is not sustainable in the Wellington urban environment. The Regional Council will have to consider, whether, along with Waka Kotahi, whether we go north of that in the future.
So any wage increases are coming out of the ratepayers' pockets?
At the moment, they're coming out of ratepayers' and taxpayers' pockets, because the living wage is something that we agreed to put on the table with Waka Kotahi.
So Waka Kotahi has also contributed to this?
Correct.
How much of a pay increase does reaching the living wage mean for the average income of a bus driver?
Well, it puts for some drivers, it will put maybe an additional dollar per hour into their pockets than they currently get. For some companies, they already pay above the living wage, but for those newer drivers, certainly within NZ Bus, it does bump up by about $1, $1.50.
It's not really going to bring a flood of new drivers, is it, Darren?
No, and that's why I say that we've committed to the living wage, but that can only be the starting point. This is Wellington. The cost of living is higher, and we are going to have to get real as a regional council, as operators, as ratepayers and users of the service, about how much we pay our drivers.
Where does this fit into the review that the Transport Minister announced, and I think submissions are due on Friday, into the public transport operating model, which nationally sets the system for councils to award contracts to private companies? Is that model sustainable? Is that model operating as it should if the council's having to come in twice, pay a contractor, but then top up?
So no, not sustainable. No, not operating in the way we would like it to operate. It may be operating as it was intended, but at the coalface, it doesn't work for us as the regional council and for the community at large. It's led to a race to the bottom in terms of driver wages and conditions, which we're now trying to correct through these types of negotiations and measures that we're putting in place. But it has had some perverse consequences, particularly in the wage and conditions area. It also doesn't adequately work through new developments like fair pay agreements that the government has put on the table more recently, and a whole range of climate change initiatives, as well as the sort of Uber environments that we are in now, and the provision for on-demand services that we're going to be under more pressure to provide in the future.
So the actual infrastructure may well need upgrading as well. What are you proposing then? How far will your submission go in detailing what you want the government to do?
So the submission will go as far as suggesting that regional councils should be able to, or the model should provide much greater support for regional councils to actually own the infrastructure and to manage that infrastructure. It's not to say that there isn't a place for bus companies and train companies to manage the day-to-day services, but if we had all of these assets within the control of regional councils, we would have a more agile operation and be able to respond more responsively to demand.
So do you want to own the assets, but do you want private companies to run the logistics? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we want to have that option.
How much do you know yet? How much would this cost? Because wasn't cost part of the reasons councils got out in the first place?
So we don't know how much that would cost, but don't forget that ratepayers are paying for every single bus on our network already. It's just by a lease arrangement, effectively. So what we're saying here is, as local authorities, we have a much lower cost of borrowing than operators do. So one of the things that ratepayers are paying for immediately is just a higher cost of borrowing that operators have. We don't have the ability to change services out from one bus company to another bus company as readily as we would if everything was within one portfolio. This is the arrangement that we had 30 years ago or more, when in Wellington we had the Wellington Bus, the City Corporation, running buses. So we know that it can work, and we can be smarter about it than we were in the past.
The reason I ask about costs is we were just hearing this morning the Wellington City Council's woes, $3.6 billion just to upgrade its water infrastructure, earthquake costs, housing costs. The same ratepayers are paying regional council bills, right? So Is there a possibility that not just because you're transferring the asset from private to public ownership, but because what you're indicating is more investment is needed, that this is going to affect the bottom line? Ratepayers are going to be up for more.
Oh, so look, to cut to the chase, ratepayers will be up for the more under any circumstances. A much greater investment is required in public transport if we're going to get the sort of mode shift that we need across the region. This proposal, in relation to bringing some services in-house and some infrastructure in-house, could be a way to actually save some of those costs for ratepayers.
Are other regional councils or councils with bus services thinking the same way? Do you know?
Not sure at the moment, Catherine. We're the only, probably us and Canterbury, are the only regional council providing public transport at the level that we do. In Auckland, it's run by Auckland Transport through the City Council. So from a regional council perspective, we're probably at the forefront of thinking about these things and responding to them. And often we do that for the rest of the country as well.
Currently, legally, you couldn't do this. The legislation requires the competition and the private contractors.
No, the legislation, the model does provide for regional councils to own the infrastructure. The policy of Waka Kotahi is that we should go down the tendering route, and that's where we've been pushed. But we're joined at the hip every step of the way here with Waka Kotahi. So the councils have very little ability to make independent decisions. They're always made with Waka Kotahi, and what we're saying is allow the PTOM model to free us up a little bit and to be able to make some of these decisions independently of Waka Kotahi.
Just finally, Darren, those contracts were signed, not with one company, of course, but with two, and how long do they have to run?
So we have five contracts across the region, including the rail contracts. Many of those contracts run for 7 years from 2018, and so they've got another 5 or so years to run. But they've then got plus two, plus three type provisions to them. So they've got another 5 to 8 years to run. And if we did anything in this space, it would either have to be gradually over time or we would have to negotiate with the operators to break those contracts.
So just to be clear, you're wanting ownership returned over the train's assets as well?
We already own the train assets, interestingly enough. So there is an example of how we can actually do that. All the trains on the Wellington network, Metlink trains, are owned by Greater Wellington Regional Council.
So that's the model you want to replicate with the buses?
In many respects, that is the model that we now know that we could replicate.
Thank you. Darren Ponta is chair of the Wellington Regional Council. And submissions on that review by the Transport Minister of how that operating model is working. That's the public transport operating model. It's used around the country. Its review submissions close this Friday.